Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. Authorities in Utah's Washington County offering more details on suspect Tyler Robinson, the accused killer of conservative activist Charlie Kirk. Washington County Sheriff Nate Brooksby describing the call by a friend of the Robinson family who alerted authorities about the suspect.
He said, hey, I know who Charlie Kirk's shooter is. I know the family through religious association, and he's in Washington County now.
Brooksby described the suspect as calm and quiet when he surrendered. Classes also resuming today at Utah Valley University a week after the shooting. In the UK, President Trump and the First Lady attending a state dinner this hour at Windsor Castle, hosted by the royal family. Authorities in Pennsylvania say police officers were fired upon while on duty today. At least two are seriously injured. And the Federal Reserve Board lowering interest rates today by a quarter point, expected to ease borrowing costs. This is ABC News.
107.5 WLAK, Amory's real news and great conversation, and home for the Todd Allball Show, Monday through Friday from 2 to 4.
For WLAK News, I'm James Kelly. State Republicans have introduced a proposed bill aimed at upholding First Amendment protections on universities of Wisconsin campuses. The legislation would prohibit the university system from restricting legal speech that does not substantially disrupt the functioning of the university. It also states that universities must conduct surveys on academic freedoms and perceived political bias. If passed into law, universities that do not adhere to the legislation would be required to include a disclaimer on all admissions notices for the following 4 years. Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers has signed an executive order requiring health insurance companies to continue covering the COVID-19 vaccine. The executive order was issued in response to eligibility changes from federal health agencies, with the FDA recommending the COVID vaccine only be covered for people over the age of 65 or with certain medical conditions. The executive order signed by Governor Evers calls on state health agencies to maintain vaccine access and requires them to respond publicly to further changes in federal vaccine policy. Benjamin's House Emergency Shelter in Rice Lake has announced a significant donation to improve their services. According to organization officials, Trinity Lutheran Church recently made a $75,000 donation to the shelter to upgrade the building's kitchen. The renovated kitchen would allow individuals using the shelter's services to practice cooking for themselves and make it easier for volunteers to provide more meals. Shelter officials say they also need around $100,000 to fix their boiler and furnace systems. The Rice Lake Elks Lodge is inviting area residents to properly retire their worn-down American flags over the weekend. The organization will offer the flag retirement service with assistance from a local Boy Scout troop on Sunday afternoon at 2 p.m. in the banquet hall of the Rice Lake Elks Lodge. Residents can bring their flags that have been worn down or tattered over time as part of the community outreach event. The flags will be burned and the ashes buried for a proper and dignified disposal rather than being thrown in the trash. For WLAK News, I'm James Kelly.
The magic number is 7. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Baseball, the Brewers host the LA Angels again tonight. Last night, the crew with a 9-2 win. Christian Yelich, a 2-run homer in the 4th. Now, 7 is the Brewers' magic number to clinch the division, but Yelly says it's still too early for all that right now.
Yeah, I mean, we just need to focus on winning that night, like not even thinking about like the magic number. We need to just keep stacking wins and playing good baseball, and that'll take care of itself. You can't do that in one night. And you start looking ahead, then things can get away from you a little bit.
College football, the Badgers, getting ready to host Maryland Saturday at Camp Randall, kickoff 11 a.m. NFL, Packers wide receiver Jaden Reed confirming he's now had surgery to repair his broken collarbone and foot fracture. Meanwhile, Christian Watson says his new contract extension takes some pressure off as he tries to come back from that torn ACL.
For me, I mean, it was really just to, you know, take that pressure off of myself so I can kind of just go out there when I get back and just play free.
That's Packers wide receiver Christian Watson with Sports on Mike Clemens.
You're listening to 107.5 WLAK, Amory's home for the Midwest Farm Report with me, Pam Yonke.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly cloudy, isolated storms tonight and a low in the low 60s. Partly sunny for tomorrow, still the chance of rain, highs in the upper 70s. More storms around Friday, high low 70s. Rain chances continue into the weekend. We're sitting at 84 degrees right now.
From Eau Claire to Green Bay.
Oh, my goodness, a powerful run to the house.
Bengals.
And Milwaukee to Madison.
Under duress, and it's a safety.
The tradition of Badger football lives here.
Touchdown, Wisconsin.
Join us Saturday. It's the Big Ten opener against the Maryland Terrapins. Our coverage begins at 9 a.m.
Now we'll get rolling.
On your home for Wisconsin football.
Here on 107.5 FM, 1260 AM, WLAK.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
Van Orden, he is now well into the hundreds of tweets, many of them with insults and profanity, wasting his time, which means he's wasting our money that we pay him to do a job other than scrolling and trolling. The more troubling tweets call for people to be fired or for federal funding to be cut simply because he doesn't like how they reacted to Charlie Kirk's murder and or his legacy.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, Brittany Merlot will tell us how long our season of summer will continue. And the Brewers continue trying to wrap up their division. J.R. Radcliffe with more. Join us.
Matinair on Air, weekday mornings 9 to 11.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Matinair on Air.
From Milwaukee to Marshfield, where passion meets purpose and policy meets people. This is the Maggie Dawn Show.
They're not there to serve you and me and the family farmer. They're there beholden to billionaires and their corporate overlords.
Get ready to challenge the status quo with a fresh perspective on the issues that matter to you.
You see our nation fraying and fracturing.
This is not normal. This is not the country that I grew up in.
Breaking down the complex world of policy and politics with clarity, conviction, and just the right amount of fun.
Correct. We know better. We know better.
Clip that.
Lawyer, economist, and fearless advocate for the truth. Here is Maggie Dawn.
Welcome, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. And happy hump day to one and all. We've got a small follow-up on our programming from yesterday. I was joined for half an hour of yesterday's program by State Representative Ahmaud Rivera-Wagner. We were talking about the fact that the MAGA regime here in the state of Wisconsin has blocked efforts by Tony Evers and Democrats in the Assembly and Senate to fulfill funding for a veterans program that helps with addiction and most predominantly veterans that struggle with housing insecurity. It is, in our state budget terms, a measly less than $2 million. For some reason, Robin Voss and Devin Lemahieu, the leaders of the Assembly and Senate respectively, have been blocking even scheduling a hearing on bills to restore that funding for this critical program in the Green Bay area. So here's the follow-up. The bill that has been offered by Senator Wall, Representative Spaday, and Representative Rivera-Wagner, which is Senate Bill 385, Assembly Bill 383, was referred in the Senate to the Senate Committee on Licensing, Regulatory Reform, and State and Federal Affairs, which is chaired by Republican State Senator Chris Kapanga. So we got an update. We're going to give you Chris Kapanga's email and phone number so you can call him and tell him to schedule the hearing on these bills. Again, it's Senate Bill 385 to restore funding for a veterans program that helps unhoused veterans, also helps with a variety of other social services. Here is Senator Kapanga's phone, 608-266-9174. That's 608-266-9174. And his email is senkapanga, K-A-P-E-N-G-A, at legis.wisconsin.gov. So tell him to schedule the hearing so that we can treat our veterans with the respect that they deserve. A bit of civic media news as well today. It is the first official day of the Civic Media Today newsletter that you can find on Substack. I just subscribed today. You should go check it out. If you don't know what Substack is, just put it into the little internet web browser. It will pop up. You can subscribe to Civic Media Today. This is a brand new daily email newsletter on Substack that will connect you to all of the terrific content that we produce every day across the network. and it is free. So go ahead and check that out. Now, on to the day's news. The Fed has announced today that it will be cutting interest rates by 0.25%. Now, here's the interesting thing about that. People usually think, yay, that's great. Maybe my credit card interest rate goes down. It's cheaper to borrow. Yes, that's all true. But generally, when the Fed is cutting interest rates, it's because the economy is doing badly. And in this case, it's doing very badly. What the Fed is concerned about is rising unemployment, stagnating economy, the markets not loving what has been happening in the Trump economy, the 2.0 Trump tariff terror, and the rest of the nonsense that he's been peddling as actual economic policy. It's not going well, and it's going to get worse. Now, here's the interesting thing here, folks. All of the Fed governors, nearly all of them, voted for the 0.25% reduction. The guy that Trump just slammed through to get onto the Federal Reserve Board, yeah, he wanted a full 0.5% reduction. Yeah. Anybody surprised by that? I'm not. And we've got a new entrant into the already crowded Democratic primary field for the governor of this great state of Wisconsin, Francesca Hong. Representative Francesca Hong throwing her hat in the race today. She identifies herself politically as a Democratic socialist. So we'll see how that goes for Ms. Hong. We hope to have her on the show soon to talk about that. And here's what I want to get to. It is full-bore Confederacy of dunces on Capitol Hill today, folks. Susan Monarez, or Monarez, I'm not quite sure how to say her name. I've heard both in the hearing today. She is testifying on Capitol Hill. This is the CDC director that RFK hired, then pressured to pre-approve whatever vaccine schedule recommendations would come out of the RFK vaccine denier skeptics now stocked board that reviews those things, to pre-approve them. That's not how it works, ladies and gentlemen. She refused to do so, stood and pushed back on some of the pressure coming from RFK in the White House, and then he fired her 29 days after he hired her. So she wrote an op-ed last week in the Wall Street Journal. It is scary. I highly recommend it. It's just a couple of pages. It's very scary. Here's a line from that. One of the troubling directives from that meeting, this is when she was called into RFK's office. It was widely reported. Lots of media outlets covered it. I was told to pre-approve the recommendations of a vaccine advisory panel newly filled with people who have publicly expressed anti-vaccine rhetoric. That panel's next meeting is scheduled for September 18th to the 19th. It is imperative that the panel's recommendations aren't rubber stamped, but instead are rigorously and scientifically reviewed before being accepted or rejected. Duh. Let's listen to some of what has happened today. And I want to start with this. If you recall, it was RFK's confirmation hearing, his confirmation, that came the closest to blowing up in Trump's face. Okay. There were big questions about whether Senator Susan Collins would ultimately vote for him. She did. But the biggest question mark, and in fact, the deciding vote on his confirmation, was cast by Senator Cassidy, a Republican of Louisiana, and a doctor who knows stuff and about vaccines. And he, during his 5 minutes of questioning of Mr. Kennedy during his confirmation hearing, asked him some really specific questions about the very thing that Dr. Monarez has said he's done and what he's planning to do with the vaccine schedule. Let's take a listen, because, again, listen to what Kennedy says in his confirmation hearing under oath before the Senate. Let's take a listen.
Do you commit that you'll revise any CDC recommendations only based on peer review, consensus-based, widely accepted science? In other words, not personal beliefs or the beliefs of any single person that you or your department may identify?
Absolutely, Senator. I am not going to go into HHS and impose my preordained opinions on anybody at HHS. I'm going to empower the scientists at HHS to do their job and make sure that we have good science that's evidence-based, that's replicatable, where the the raw data is published.
I'm almost out of time, so let me get to another question.
All right.
Do you promise that FDA will not deprioritize or delay review and or approval of new vaccines, and that vaccine review standards will not change from historical norms?
Well, we will have the best vaccine standards with safety studies, and I will not, if the
panels recommend. That's a little bit of a different answer than the question I asked.
Yeah.
Because what is the best could be in the eyes of the beholder. So let me read again. Promise that the FDA will not deprioritize or delay review and or approval of new vaccines, and that vaccine review standards will not change from historical norms.
Yes.
Yeah. Until apparently mid-September and tomorrow or the day after, when this vaccine advisory board packed with vaccine skeptics recommends some new schedule based on not peer-reviewed, not consensus science, but cherry-picked science by these wackadoodle vaccine deniers. And here's the thing. I don't get why they're doing this. Fine. Come in. Commission new studies. Look at the literature. Right? To test these things that you're concerned about, even though there are decades and decades of tests and statistics that prove that vaccines are safe. But redo this? Sure, go ahead. But that's not what they're doing. They're picking people based on their previously held vaccine skepticism, which is not based in peer-reviewed consensus, state-of-the-art medical and scientific knowledge, to then cherry-pick studies to come up with a vaccine schedule that is going to put our kids at risk. We've got the largest measles outbreak that our country has seen in a century. Why is that? Because people like RFK peddle in nonsense. So I want to go back to some of the testimony today from Dr. Menares, because it is scary. Let's take cut 21.
He directed me to commit in advance to approving every ACIP recommendation, regardless of the scientific evidence. He also directed me to dismiss career officials responsible for vaccine policy without cause. He said if I was unwilling to do both, I should resign.
That's not how it's supposed to work. It's just not how it's supposed to work. And all of us know that. And some of the things that Dr. Menares is claiming that Mr. Kennedy has said to other CDC officials is downright revolting and shocking. Take a listen to this.
And the one I think that hurt me the most was a particularly vivid phrase he said during the COVID outbreak. CDC told hospitals to turn away sick COVID patients until they had blue lips before allowing them to get treatment.
And it is fair to say, in your view, that those statements are not true.
Those statements are not true.
What? But it's the Confederacy of Dunces, ladies and gentlemen. What on God's earth would possess Mr. Kennedy to say such a thing? Other than someone who is inclined to believe conspiracy theories and every other, you know, completely ill-informed opinion that gets trafficked on the interwebs. This is from Wall Street Journal reporting. Menares also said Kennedy sharply criticized the CDC and his employees, calling it the most corrupt federal agency. He said CDC employees were killing children and that they don't care, that employees were, quote, bought by the pharmaceutical industry and forced people to wear masks like a dictatorship. Looney Tunes. RFK is an idiot. Is an idiot. An admitted drug user who said that he functioned better at the Ivy League university he got to attend because his name is Kennedy, when he was doing heroin or some such other. I mean, he admitted this on a podcast. This is the guy. It's going to put all of our kids at risk. Some of the most recent reporting is specifically about the hepatitis B vaccine. We've basically eradicated that. It causes a long and painful death. We're going to return to this particular hearing on the other side. I might even bring you some cash money Patel, who continues his epic meltdown in front of Congress. Confederacy of dunces indeed. Folks, stay with me. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll be back with more in just a moment.
This is Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK.
Does Trump's big bill end taxes on tips and overtime? No. President Donald Trump's new law exempts certain tip and overtime income from federal tax. But the deductions expire in 2028 and come with limits. Workers earning under $150,000 can deduct up to $25,000 in tips and $12,500 in overtime. Social Security, Medicare, and state taxes still apply. The Tax Policy Center says 2% of households will benefit from the tip provision, saving $1,800. The White House estimates $1,400 in average annual savings from the overtime deduction. I'm Tricia Young for Wisconsin Watch. Fact briefs are bite-sized fact checks of trending claims produced by Wisconsin Watch and GigaFact. Read more at wisconsinwatch.org.
My part-time service in the Army National Guard makes it possible for me to be more for the community I call home. My training helps me at work when I lead by example. The Army National Guard has taught me the value of showing respect to those I come in contact with each day. My service also allows me to be there for my community in ways others can't. I help my hometown recover after nature strikes. My service in the Army National Guard allows me to keep my country and those I care about safe from threats. I also work with a network of professionals that help me succeed and accomplish the mission. Plus, the Army National Guard education benefits make getting a higher education a reality. Being an Army National Guard soldier makes living and serving in my community more rewarding every day. Learn how you too can live and serve part-time, close to home by visiting NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Wisconsin Army National Guard, aired by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association and this station.
Is getting vaccinated on your to-do list? We can help you check that off.
You've got this.
Yes, you do. See how we've got you at yougotthis.usaging.org. A message from the Aging and Disability Vaccination Collaborative, powered by U.S. Aging.
Come work with us. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state. Open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Dumpster fires galore, Cash, Money Money Patel, RFK Jr. It is the Confederacy of Dunces brought to you by none other than the MAGA regime. Result? More death, basically. They are talking about, I've seen some reporting that is indicating that RFK Jr. and this vaccine advisory panel, which he's stocked with all these vaccine skeptics and wingnuts, are targeting or part of the childhood vaccine schedule changes that they're looking at is the hepatitis B vaccine, which is given basically like you're born, you get the hep B vaccine. Because it was a killer in the past, and it is a long, not long necessary, but is a painful death. It is highly transmissible. It is blood-borne. It's called a silent killer because it can become chronic before you have any symptoms. And then once you do find out because you have symptoms, you can die within like a week or two. This is a physician. His name's Brian McMahon, who treated some Hep B cases back in the 70s. Told me about a particular patient, 18 years old, 4-point GPA with a full ride to university. She kept having these stomach pains, but she put off a week to the doctor. Finally, 2 weeks before she's supposed to graduate from high school, she comes in to see me. She had a big mass in her liver. I biopsy tested her for Hep B. She was positive, and it was liver cancer. And so I sat with her 2 weeks later when she died a horrible, painful death. This is a safe vaccine. And yet, people are thinking that this is part of what's going to get changed in these new vaccine protocols. And Dr. Rand Paul, who knows the science, was acting like this is some abomination. Listen to his questions and Susan Menarez, former CDC director's response. Take a listen.
See, everybody's like blithely going along, we can't change the childhood. You're somehow terrible if you want to change the childhood. We should be discussing what is the childhood vaccine schedule, and you should be, the burden should be on you. You want to make all the kids take this? The burden is upon you and the people you wouldn't fire to prove to us that we need to give our six-month-old a COVID vaccine and that we need to give our one-day-old a hepatitis B vaccine. That's what the debate ought to be about, not whether all vaccines are good or whether we live in Alice in Wonderland.
I actually agree with you, and I was open to the science. I just would not pre-commit to approving all the ACIP recommendations without the science.
Untrue.
What a jerk. Shame on you, Senator Paul. You know better. Untrue. How do you know, sir? Were you in the room? I mean, Confederacy of Dunces. 855-752-4842. 855-75-CIVIC. Matt from Middleton, you're on the air. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, hi. First of all, small point of order. Remember, Rand Paul is like an eye doctor, so let's not give him too much credit.
But, fair point, my friend. Fair point.
Yeah. Did we already forget that somebody took literal rifle shots at the CDC and a police officer was killed? Where was this call to tone down rhetoric and that political violence will not be tolerated when they seem to politicize everything while they've managed to turn vaccines and science and medicine into politics? And their rhetoric got a police officer killed. Where was the crackdown then?
Hear, hear, Matt. Thank you so much. That is literally the second thing that Susan Menarez, former CDC director, said in her op-ed in the Wall Street Journal dated September 4th. Quote, during my first week as CDC director, a gunman opened fire on our Atlanta headquarters. Investigators recovered more than 500 shell casings at the scene and more than 180 rounds struck CDC campus buildings. Officer David Rose was killed. Where was all the right-wing outrage then? How about when our babies start dying from Hep B, a perfectly preventable disease, or measles? How bad does this nonsense have to get before people start standing up and saying, science is real. Vaccines are good. They save lives. Unbelievable. Ross from Crawford County, welcome to the Maggie Dawn Show. Go ahead, sir.
Hi, Maggie. Thanks for letting me out. Great show.
Thank you.
So I'll make a quick comment about the vaccine thing. I think there's a lot of people who don't have a science background who are concerned that vaccines cause problems with kids. Okay, so I mean, I would totally understand if Kennedy said, "Look, we're going to spend money and we're going to try to nail this thing down," but instead he's sort of just assuming already that these vaccines are a problem, and so he's causing all this. It's like you said, insanity. But I'd like to switch to the economy, because the economy, the state of the economy right now is sort of a funny thing, because there was all these tariffs and then back and forth. It seems as if like there are two economies. So when one looks at the stock market.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Russ.
It's going up. It's gradually going up. There was a short crash, but it's going up. So one could say on that end of things, you know, like the poop has not hit the fan yet. For working class people and people who may not be worrying about the stock market, it's really, I think you think of it as inflation and these kind of things. And inflation still isn't super high. It's like 3%. But I think what it is that these tariffs, I really believe that there was a big momentum during the Biden years, post COVID. People were spending money. The money was there, wherever it came from, I don't understand. But people were spending money and are still, like they said that this last month, that people were still spending a lot of money. So, but there are these indicators that say that there could be problems ahead. So I sometimes think with the economy, to the average person, it might look like it's okay. Prices are a little bit higher. But I think...
I got to hop in. Just one note on the economy. The stock market ain't the economy. What you feel in your pocketbook is, that is reality. And here's this, we haven't even come close to the worst of it. It will get worse. I promise you that. The prices will continue to go up. We're going to continue this great conversation. On the other side, I'm going to be joined by Representative Angelina Cruz. She used to be a teacher before she was an elected official. We'll talk about the state of Wisconsin's education.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK. Amory's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Fabulous Farm Babe Pam Yonke here. You're listening to 107.5 WLAK, home of the Midwest Farm Report.
For WLAK News, I'm James Kelly. State Representative Francesca Hung of Madison has entered the growing Democratic field for governor. In her announcement on Wednesday, Hung said she's running to fix a system that's rigged against the working class. She joins State Senator Kelda Royce, Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez, Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley, and American Family Field vendor Ryan Sternett in the Democratic primary field. Washington County Executive Josh Showman and New Berlin businessman Bill Berrien are the only two Republicans in the race so far. The Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources has released its wolf population estimates for 2025. According to the data released last week, the DNR estimates that there are approximately 1,200 gray wolves in the state this year. The total is about 100 fewer than the 2024 estimates, which wildlife researchers say could be a sign of the wolf population reaching its capacity. Managing the wolf population has become a controversial topic, especially in northern Wisconsin, where farmers have complained of the wolves targeting their livestock. A Duluth elementary school activated their secure protocols this week after a bear wandered onto the premises. According to Lowell Elementary School officials, students were moved inside the building on Monday for safety and an alert message was sent out to parents. Minnesota Department of Natural Resources officials say bears are typically more active around this time of year as they prepare for the winter months. They also say they're tracking six collared black bears in the area, and the neighborhood where Lowell Elementary School is sees frequent visits. Hayward has been selected to host the 2026 Wisconsin Governor's Fishing Opener in May. The yearly event has honored the official opening of fishing season across the state since 1966 as part of an effort to promote both the sport and natural resource conservation and tourism efforts. The 2026 Wisconsin Governor's Fishing Opener will take place on May 1st and 2nd on Nelson Lake. In addition to the traditional festivities, the event will also feature a family fishing day on May 2nd to encourage families to enjoy fishing together for free. For WLAK News, I'm James Kelly.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Feel like spending Christmas in Las Vegas? I'm sure the town would love to bring tourism back, and hopefully Mariah Carey's new residency will help. Mariah Carey's Christmas time in Las Vegas will kick off November 28th at Dolby Live at the Park MGM. Carey will perform 10 shows that will conclude on December 13th. Do you think she'll sing All I Want for Christmas? If you're looking for a road trip, tickets go on sale September 20th. Sydney Sweeney continues to diversify her resume with her latest role being a maid. The Housemaid stars Sweeney alongside Amanda Seyfried in this dark psychological thriller. The story follows Sweeney's character, who is fresh out of prison and who is hired by Seyfried's character and her handsome husband and becomes close to the attractive couple. Pretty sure this isn't an adult film, but who knows? The Housemaid will drop in theaters December 19th. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Start your day with me, Pam Yonke, every morning with the Midwest Farm Report, right here on 107.5 WLAK.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly cloudy, isolated storms tonight, and a low in the low 60s. Partly sunny for tomorrow, still a chance of rain, highs in the upper 70s. More storms around Friday, high-low 70s. Rain chances continue into the weekend. We're sitting at 84 degrees right now.
Oh, this is Robert Pilot of Native Roots Radio. On our show, we share stories from Turtle Island highlighting the people and issues shaping our communities. From protecting water to treaty rights and preserving languages and traditions, we cover it all. Hear voices like Arvina Martin of Emerge Wisconsin, Dr. Stately, Robert Lilligren, and more. Because Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
Native Roots Radio, weeknights at 8 on your local Civic Media radio station.
Not completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
At age 30, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, you can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Pete Schwabba. On the next Nightlight, I welcome actor and Appleton native son, actor Mike McGill, whose credits include Shameless and Bosch, and syndicated columnist Greg Schwemm. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
Welcome, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. It's Wednesday. It's 4:30, and it's time for one of my favorite segments of the week. We call it Broad Appeal because I talk to amazing women elected officials and political leaders, movement organizers, and activists from across the state and beyond, because women in those roles have broad appeal. Also, I'm happy to call myself broad. I mean it with deep and reverential respect. With all of that, super happy to bring to the show this afternoon Representative Angelina Cruz of Assembly District 62 from the Racine area. Welcome to the program. It's great to have you here.
It's great to be here, Maggie. Thank you so much for inviting me. I'm really excited.
Yes, me too. You are a almost brand spanking new legislator, which is so amazing. But I want people to hear from you about your decision to run for office and how that really came to be, because this is the story that I hear in different versions and forms every single time I talk with, and I think it's very pronounced, with women elected officials. They're doing their job, they're working in their communities, and they'll see a problem or a need. And it really becomes this catalyst, this call to serve. So tell folks, you're a teacher. You've been a teacher for a long time, teaching middle schoolers, fifth graders. Tell us how that work got you into the teachers union and some involvement there and how this all evolved. How did you become Representative Cruz?
That is a really great question. I like to point out to people that being a politician or legislator was nothing that I had ever aspired to do with my life. Some days I wake up and wonder, is this what I want to keep doing? And I say that jokingly. I am very happy to be in the legislature serving the people of Assembly District 62. But it was quite a journey. I did start teaching in 2003. So for over two decades, I have identified myself as a proud public school teacher, and started as a fifth grade elementary school teacher at Dr. Jones Elementary in Racine, Wisconsin. So it was a K-5, very much in the elementary world. In about 2010, I graduated from UW-Milwaukee with a degree in educational policy. And so that was sort of my world, my trajectory. I just thought that I would be a fifth grade elementary school teacher forever. Fast forward to February 2011.
Yep.
And our governor at that time, Scott Walker,
yes,
passed the budget repair bill, which included...
Let's not call it that. Let's just call it straight up union busting. That's what he did.
thank you, ma'am. Yes, mm-hmm. That indeed is what he did, which really activated... I know I am not unique in terms of that landscape having activated just a world of unionists fighting back, and that was sort of the fire starter, if you will. And so it was at that time that Act 10 was passed, a union busting bill that targeted specifically public sector workers, and I would argue most specifically public school teachers, educators, really from the K-12 world all the way up to the university level. Public educators became public enemy number one to the state legislature. And it was at that time that I it awakened in me the understanding that I needed to really invest in my local union in order to defend public education as we knew it at that time in the state of Wisconsin. So I became a building representative in my little elementary school. From there, I became the political action committee chairperson. I became an elected officer and sort of worked my way up to being elected as the president of my local. At the time, it was Racine Education Association. I'm still an REA member, but internally, our two bargaining units, the REA and the REAA, have since combine their governance structure. So we sort of move as one.
Yes.
Internally, we recognize that we needed to combine our efforts, that our struggles were the same.
Yes.
And so from that point on, I was the first Latina to be elected to that position in 2016. And I remain the sitting president of Racine Educators United, which is the umbrella of the REA and the REAA. So I'm serving both as the local union president and as the state elected legislator for Assembly District 62 currently.
Keeps you busy, I would imagine.
Sure it sure does.
One thing that I wanted to talk with you about is we truly have in the state of Wisconsin a public education massive defunding that has been going on. It started under Scott Walker in the Republican-controlled legislature. And the defunding is coming in all sorts of ways and forms. It's a little bit like death by a thousand, and I'm not going to call them paper cuts because it's bigger, but like death by a million gashes kind of thing. So it's both not fully funding, not meeting the needs of school districts, rural and urban. All school districts are hurting right now. But it's also the siphoning of funds out of public schools for voucher schools, which are basically can discriminate at will, reject any student they want, have little to no accountability, not that's on a state level at all. It really depends on the district you're in and how the district tends to operate and oversee, if at all, voucher schools. There is no long-term study that I'm aware of that has ever shown that voucher programs produce better academic results over the long term for kids. So that it's a dubious proposition. Now, I'm going to say all that and say this. Back in the day in Milwaukee, it was a powerful tool to give largely Black and Brown families some additional choices because we had stupidly decided to fund public schools through property taxes, a proposition that will never make any damn sense to me. But I wanted to give you the opportunity to speak a little bit about this because I know that you just introduced a bill to address this failure of the state to be accountable to fund the public schools that benefit businesses and are very much in the best interests of our kids.
Right. So that is, let me think about where to start with that. So, you're correct. The state of Wisconsin is failing to meet its constitutional obligations to deliver a free and fair public education to all the children of the state of Wisconsin, and has been systematically divesting from the public school system for the better part of over two decades. So I would argue it started even before Scott Walker. Scott Walker accelerated it, if that is even,
yes. Yep.
I mean, it's a little mind blowing, right? So 2011, as a teacher unionist, as a union president, we very much characterize Act 10 and the attack on teachers' unions. We understand it as Scott Walker and the Republican legislator going after the last line of defense.
Yeah.
In public school standing in the state of Wisconsin. So I also like to point out that even though there was this concerted attack against our collective bargaining rights and stripping us of those, we still exist.
Right.
Racine Educators United is one of the largest local labor unions in the state of Wisconsin, the Wisconsin Education Association Council, which is our state affiliate, is the largest labor union in the state of Wisconsin. And we are all affiliates of the National Education Association, which is the largest labor union in the country. So we still exist. We're still here. We're still fighting. And that is really sort of what keeps, to the best of our ability, the attack at bay. But we're really, we've come up to a point in time in which I don't see how what we are suffering under is sustainable.
No, it's absolutely not tenable. Like, the dam is breaking and cracking and the water is starting to rush down the river. It's like every single county, every single school district, I feel like, has had to go to a referendum. I was so disgusted and appalled by efforts to introduce legislation by the MAGA regime in this state to ban that practice, to actually, and it's like, what is your point? You won't sufficiently fund the schools, and now you'll take away the one tool they have to scrape and claw their way to at least some way to MacGyver from year to year, and they want to strip that away. I have to ask, why? If the public, if that community votes for a referendum to raise their property taxes to fund their schools, what business is it of the state to step in and say, you can't do that? It's an abomination. I wanted to also make this point, and I don't think it gets made quite enough, about voucher schools and some of their awful, awful history in this country. They really first came about, if we understand a voucher to be taking public taxpayer monies that would have otherwise gone into your public schools and sending it to a private, unaccountable, unregulated, no standards, doesn't know if it works, other private school that can discriminate. The first time we saw these en masse in this country was after Brown v. Board of Education. They were called and are now known as segregation academies, and they sprung up all across the South. And their explicit purpose was to allow schools to not permit Black students to attend, but to use public money to fund those schools. We see that operating in a very similar way, meaning they're not saying it's for just white kids, because that would maybe get them in trouble. But the result is, especially in a large district like Racine or Milwaukee, that you have kids, we are segregating our schools. And I just wanted to read this very brief statement. This is from the White Citizens Council. Okay, this is its journal back from 1964. It was in Mississippi. Okay, their journal was called The Citizen. And they were trying to encourage white parents to send their white kids to these now all-white segregation academies that didn't permit Black kids to attend and were funded by taxpayer dollars. Here's what this magazine said. See if it sounds familiar to you, Representative. Parents want their children to be raised and educated free from the tensions of racial conflict in the classroom, free from the frustrating drag of mass mediocrity, and free from the blight of self-styled progressive educators whose avowed aim is to turn young Americans from the established inheritance of their fathers to alien theories of collectivism and anti-white racism. It's as if those words were spoken by Charlie Kirk yesterday, or J.D. Vance, or Donald Trump, or any of the other woke police that has been invented out of nowhere. I'm going to stop my rant. We're going to take care of a little bit of business. I'm going to come back with Representative Cruz. Again, she's from Assembly District 62 out of Racine. And we're going to talk about what's coming next. How do we shore up our public schools? How do we solve this problem? Because the kids indeed are our future, and we owe them far better than what Republicans have been delivering for our kids in this state. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Stay tuned.
Reach, engage, grow with Civic Media. Log on civicmedia.us/advertise.
Here's another community reminder from 107.5 WLAK. Ruby's Pantry distributes the second Saturday of each month. And you can check out the schedule at rubyspantry.org. That's rubyspantry.org. Ruby's Pantry, the second Saturday of each month from 7:30 to 9 a.m. And they do that at SMC Limited on Griffin Street in Avery. Another community reminder for you from 107.5 WLAK.
Hi, my name is Chuck Collins. I'm the great-grandson of the meatpacker Oscar Mayer and a member of the Patriotic Millionaires. I'm also the author of a new book, Burned by Billionaires, How Concentrated Wealth and Power are Ruining Our Lives and Planet. This summer proved to all of us that climate change is real and it is deadly. And I'm here to tell you that a small group of billionaires are making it worse. Did you know that billionaire Jeff Bezos's wife, Lauren Sanchez, emitted more carbon in her 11-minute Blue Origin space flight than the average person emits in a lifetime? Did you know that the average super yacht produces as much carbon emissions as 1,500 regular vehicles? And that private jets emit 10 to 20 times more pollutants per passenger than commercial airplanes? So who should pay for climate change? People like you who recycle and turn off the lights when you leave the room, or billionaires who take joyrides in space? Tax the rich, tax the rich, tax the rich. I'm Chuck Collins. I'm a patriotic millionaire, and I approve this message.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Frank Hermans. When we moved here, yeah. I called the Y because my daughter was like, I don't know, 7 years old. I said, hey, I'm calling about your beginner's gymnastics class. Yeah. I'm 40 years old. I've never had a gymnastics class. So do you think I should start there? Frank, I get nothing.
Kidding me?
On the other end, it's just silence. Even after she knew I was kidding.
You should tape that.
Come on. And I did take the class, and I did really well.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
I'm Rick Smith, host of The Rick Smith Show. If you're looking for honest talk, real stories, and straight-up news that matters to you, tune in to The Rick Smith Show. We're digging into the issues that affect your job, your family, your future. Join me weeknights at 9 on the Civic Media Radio Network, because your voice deserves to be heard. That's The Rick Smith Show, heard weeknights at 9 right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Doctors Without Borders is delivering life-saving medical care where it's needed most in communities around the world. From bandaging war-wounded patients in Sudan to providing clean drinking water in Haiti, we're in more than 70 countries worldwide, bringing patients from sick to recovering, from emergency to aid, from crisis to care. This life-saving care is made possible by a global movement of supporters like you. Thank you.
Connecting audiences, powering brands. This is Civic Media. Learn more at civicmedia.us/advertise.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We are in this week's segment of Broad Appeal, a segment we bring to you every Wednesday at 4:30, where we talk to women elected officials, political leaders, activists, organizers, and folks that need to hear from women more. This is the place to find them every week, 4:30 on this very program. We've got Representative Angelina Cruz of Assembly District 62. She is a lifelong teacher. She now also is the president of Racine Educators United and, of course, is serving Assembly District 62 and her wonderful state legislature. We're happy to have her here. Before the segment, we were talking about some of the terrible history of voucher schools. They were first used en masse all across the Deep South following the Brown v. Board of Education to set up segregation academies using taxpayer dollars. They have always been used as a way to siphon dollars away from free, widely available public education. And you wanted to talk a little bit about what went down in this last biennial budget about voucher school funding versus public school funding, please.
Yeah, absolutely. So I will say openly that I voted against the state budget. I primarily ran on a platform of pro-public education, I think that to no one's surprise. And so I was very disappointed with what was put forward in terms of it not being enough. As we covered earlier, we've had over two decades of disinvestment in the public school system. And so what was put forward in terms of public school funding, we had some modest increases to special education reimbursement, 42% the first year, up to 45% in the second year. But we also had that in conjunction with $0 in new general aid for both years in the biennium.
Yeah.
And so while we won modest increases to special education, that should never have precluded in putting money into general aid.
General aid for schools, and every school has been having massive problems. And I think they've gotten worse post-COVID, right? Because you've seen enrollment slightly drop in public schools. A lot of public school funding is driven on a per pupil basis. They're counting heads literally when the school year starts, as any teacher will tell you. And I wanted to just lean into the special education funding reimbursement rate for a moment, if you will.
Absolutely.
Because it is one of the grossest inequities that is so clear that you can point to. First problem between voucher schools and public schools is voucher schools can decline admission to any student who might need an individualized education plan, right? Mm-hmm. The IEPs or disabled students. We don't want to do that. Public schools can't. They are the educator of last resort. And so the idea that a public school special education reimbursement rate would be at, say, let's just call it 45%. When a voucher school's reimbursement rate, courtesy of Scott Walker and the MAGA regime here in the state of Wisconsin, is at 90%. I think it's even a little over 90. What is the reimbursement and why are those rates so important? And why is the failure to increase them for public schools creating a real and active daily harm to public schools?
Correct. So the reimbursement rate is related to the billing amount that it costs to deliver services that are stipulated in individualized education programs. So services that special education teachers and special education teams determine. So those are comprised of not just the teachers, but also administrators and advocates and parents, in many cases, the students themselves. They come up with a plan to make sure that the needs of the child are met in the educational setting. And then once those services are delivered, teachers are responsible for documenting and submitting billing. And so what the state of Wisconsin is currently reimbursing those costs at are about 30% is what they currently stand. So we just bump that up to 42% this first year. They'll be reimbursed. Where does the rest of that cost then come from? What covers the other 70%? That comes from the general funding sources. So the funding sources that we get through the general aid are pure pupil expenditures that are allotted to districts, and that total amount, the money is then pulled from that pool of money.
It's like a double whammy, right? Mm-hmm. So the public schools have more on a relative basis, meaning how many SPED students to as a proportion of your total school population. Public schools now have a higher proportion of SPED students as compared to what they did even 10 years ago, because voucher schools will decline admission to kids that have complex special needs. And so it's pulling out of the general fund, which they don't have enough money from to begin with. And they're getting a double whammy because they don't get reimbursed like the voucher schools do. It makes me so mad. Yeah. So, Representative Cruz, what are we going to do about this?
Yeah.
How do we begin to... Please.
Underscore. So we got $0 in new general aid for both years in the biennium. However, voucher and charter schools... taxpayers are on the hook for about $1.8 billion guaranteed for funding those systems over the next 2 years. So fully funded voucher charter schools, not funded public schools, which are the only schools with the commitment, the capacity, and the legal obligation to serve every child that walks through their doors.
We're gonna have to leave it there. I'm so sorry. Time flies when you're having fun with Representative Angelina Cruz. She's got legislation to make the state accountable. Call your state rep and senator and tell them to support Representative Cruz's legislation to fully fund our children's future. Up next, I'm joined by General Russell Honoré. It's going to be an incredible discussion. He was the general that oversaw the Katrina response.
You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franz, and authorities in Utah disclosing details of Tyler Robinson's surrender after the fatal shooting of conservative activist Charlie Kirk at Utah Valley University. Washington County Sheriff Nate Brooksby says a family friend of the Robinsons called authorities to work out a surrender.
Tyler knew it was just inevitable with all the law enforcement pressure that he, you know, his picture in the news, the gun on the news, he knew it was inevitable that he would be caught.
Brooksby says the 22-year-old agreed to surrender if SWAT teams didn't go to his family's home. He says Robinson was quiet and somber when officers took him into custody. In Pennsylvania this hour, at least one officer is believed to be dead and several others shot while they were serving a warrant in York County. Law enforcement officials briefed on the investigation confirmed the news to ABC News. No other details were disclosed. President Trump and the First Lady attending a lavish state dinner this hour hosted by royal family members at Windsor Castle. This is ABC News.